You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we hit a checkpoint in the year. We're halfway through. We take a look back at the first half of 2011 and pick our top five favorite films.
Yeah, this is pretty cool, man. We have to do this, make this a tradition.
I agree. It's the first time we're doing it, and I think it's a lot of fun because you get to actually put films on your top five that I don't think by the end of the year are going to be there.
Yeah, we should give credit where credit is due. This was actually the idea of our guest today.
Yeah, and our guest that's going to be joining us in a little while here is David Fowley from KeepingItReal.com, film critic here in Chicago.
David J. Fowley.
Yes, David J.
You will
J.
not
Fowley.
Deny him his middle initial, Rye.
We met him at C2E2, and we promised him to come on and jaw about the movies, and he finally made his way over to Mother's, and we're going to do just that.
Sounds good to me.
Besides that, we got Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore on a new film, Horrible Bosses, opening up. Tons of theater reviews. I saw Tree of Life. What'd you catch, Matt?
I saw Cars 2 and Green Lantern.
Yes, and David J. Fowley is going to be coming in here with a review of Transformers 3 he caught last night at the midnight premiere of it.
Yep, over at the IMAX suite.
Yeah, and then also, of course, we got DVD reviews, trivia, Hollywood headlines, and a brand new segment we are introducing this week called...
Cinema War.
I like it. So let's get started. Let's bring in David right away. David J. Fowley, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
How are things going?
Going good. Seeing a lot of movies, trying to catch up with reviewing them, but really enjoying most of what I see.
Now, you write for the site, it is your site, keepingitreal.com, and there's a couple of dashes in there, correct?
Right, yeah, there's a reason for the dashes. When we were trying to find Keeping It Real, we found a fisherman's site, and we didn't want people to be directed that way, to reel them that way. We wanted them to reel them to us, so, you know, yeah. Keeping it real is where you'd find us, and it's myself and my friend Paul Balsam, who also writes reviews for the site, and he and I are just friends who we have some of the same common friends, and a lot of those friends would come to us and ask us, you know, what movies should they go see or check out, and you know how those questions can be.
Sure.
You know,
Rye knows how those
all depends on how those people are and how they perceive movies. So we figured we'd just put it on a site and put it up there, put our reviews up there, and have the readers figure it out for themselves.
Yeah, and it's sort of blowing up from there, right? I mean, like, you guys are doing okay and
yeah,
having fun with it.
We are. We've had some good guests. Another fellow critic, Josh Larson, appears twice yearly on we're going to post our own top five, so you'll see what I'm going to be talking about on our blog later this weekend, and he's going to join us with his own, and Paul's going to chime in too. And then Josh usually joins us at the end of the year for the top 10 films of the year. So, yeah, we're getting recognized. So
that's awesome.
Nice.
And, yeah, I know how it is to be seeing lots of movies that you feel sometimes bogged down when you just don't want to write a review anymore.
I hear you.
There's some movies, I know for me, especially when I was writing them a lot and even here for Cinema Jaw, the toughest ones to review are the middle-of-the-road ones. If
exactly.
It's not a great movie, I don't want to come in here and talk about it highly. And if it's not bad, it's no fun because I can't make fun of the movie. It's just sort of there.
Yeah. It's so true. I was feeling that way walking home from a screening recently. I told a friend of mine, like I said, you know, these middle-of-the-road movies are so hard to review. You kind of don't care, but you know people are going to be interested in what you know your opinion is and you just kind of want to put it out there. But usually you find something interesting to say.
Yeah, no doubt about it. About the actors or the performances or something.
Exactly.
Sure. And I guess going way back, when did you first become such a big fan of movies? Young
gosh.
Or was it something later on?
Yeah, well, it had to have been really young. I think I actually remember my dad taking me to see Star Wars. I must have been like 5 or 6 in the theater. And I just remember...
Are we talking A New Hope?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, come on now. Yeah, absolutely. New Hope, definitely, yeah. yeah, definitely New Hope. And I just remember seeing that poster. And I'm also an artist, so I was always drawing. And when I saw that poster of, like, you know, the strapping Luke with Leia below, then we didn't know that they're brother and sister. But
Right.
I was just like, wow, what is this? You know, and spaceships and everything. And I just knew that this was going to be amazing. And, you know, since then, you know, I kind of grew up in the whole Lucas Spielberg era and, you know, it really hit me what films could do to you. It could transform you to different places and really have some great artful meaning too. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Nicely said.
Yeah. So, David from keepingitreal.com. We always end our guest interviews with some goofy jaw questions, movie-related, to get to know the guests a little bit better. Question number one over to you, David. Who would you rather have on your bowling team, the dude Jeff Bridges from Big Lebowski or Ernie McCracken, Bill Murray from Kingpin?
I think Ernie's too unpredictable. I'm going to have to go with the dude. Yeah, the dude is, he's cool. He's low maintenance, you know, and you keep the White Russians coming and there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah,
I agree.
The dude.
He's a safer pick, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
no
your
doubt.
Bud.
You get to choose to go on vacation, a one-week adventure, I should say, with one of the two characters. Who do you go with, Han Solo or Indiana Jones?
This is the tough one. Everybody picks the dude, but this one stumps.
So we're talking vacations on this planet, right?
Not necessarily.
No. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with Han Solo. You know, I mean, William Falcon. You know, he's kind of, he doesn't want you touching any, you know, levers or anything like that. So I could probably just kick back and, you know, play chess with whoever, you know. And
Chewbacca.
And, if Chewbacca's there and just hang out and whatever, you know. Watch out for the asteroids.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I like the choice of Han Solo.
This is no asteroid.
That's right.
No, it's a cave. This is no cave.
That's
Third
right.
question is this one. Which boss would you rather have?
Hmm.
Gordon Gekko from Wall Street or Miranda Priestly from The Devil Wears Prada?
Wow. I'm going to have to go with Gekko. Just because, I mean, Miranda, she seems like way too backstabbing and unpredictable. And there I go with unpredictable again.
Worse than Gekko?
Yeah, I just, you could kind of, I would say you could kind of see Gekko coming, you know.
You can see where he's coming from.
Yeah, you can see where he's coming and what maybe some of his plays would be. And, you know, you can, if I know that environment, I can kind of maybe be hopefully one step ahead of him. But with Miranda, man, she's way out there.
Yeah, she's strict. I'm actually scared of...
Exactly. She's like Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, she sure is.
Yeah.
Striking resemblance.
Mm-hmm.
Uncanny.
Yeah.
All right, so David's going to be sitting in on the whole episode. We're going to get started here. Awesome. Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore, which is brought to us by...
The new 400 theaters.
Yes, they are located at 6746 North Sheridan. And what's the best thing about the new 400 theater, man?
Well, in my opinion, Ryan, the best thing about the new 400 theaters is the full service bar that they
full
have.
Full service bar.
At the concession stand, you can get a beer, a cocktail, margarita, whatever you like.
Absolutely. Plus, they got the best prices around for first run movies. So.
Yeah, I know. It's only $7.50 for a first run movie. That's really one of the best prices in Chicago, if not the best.
It sure is. So to check out what's playing at the new 400, check them out at www.thenew400.com.
And we thank them for their support.
Absolutely. So, Eye for an Eye, Matt. Horrible bosses. Three friends conspire to murder their bosses when they realize they are standing in the way of their happiness in this new comedy starring Jason Bateman, Kevin Spacey, Jennifer Aniston, Colin Farrell, and Jamie Foxx. It is directed by Seth Gordon, who directed the hilarious documentary King of Kong, Fistful of Dollars. Matt, interested or ignore on Horrible Bosses?
I really want this to be a good movie because I love the King of Kong, so I'm interested.
David, interested or ignore on Horrible Bosses?
I am interested. Just on Colin Farrell's hairpiece alone.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
It absolutely looks ridiculously funny.
Crazy.
I'm giving this an interested as well.
Yeah.
Aniston actually might even pull it off on this one.
Hopefully. Because I was going to say, if anything, the film's handicapped with Aniston because I hate her so much. But everybody else I like, so I'm giving this an interested on that.
You're not alone. I mean, it might be a movie where I can tolerate Aniston. So
she is good looking. She's not hard on the eyes. You know, acting aside for a moment, that scene they show in the trailer with her and the banana and the hot dog and the popsicle.
Yeah, that's eye candy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first. Cinema Jaw is giving Horrible Bosses three interesteds. And speaking of new movies, we got a lot of reviews coming at you that are all in the theater right now. I got out, Matt, and saw Tree of Life, and this is a difficult one to review, but I'm going to do my best here. I finally did catch Terrence Malick's bold new film. The movie is nonlinear, and I'm not sure I have seen a film with this scope and boldness in the past 10, 15 years, if ever. The story centers on a Texas family in the 1950s. Brad Pitt plays a very strict father of three boys. The story is shown from the oldest son's perspective. Another part of the story shows the oldest son grown up and middle-aged. He is then played by Sean Penn. Mixed in between, we have shots of volcanoes, galaxies, some dinosaurs, and a Triforce. There are some flashes of utter brilliance in this film. For instance, the 30-minute segment of their first son being born and discovering the world around him, slowly growing up, meeting his newborn brothers, becoming the leader of the boys. I'm not sure I have ever seen the beauty of growing up caught on film better. The classical music in the film, along with some of the shots, can almost bring you to tears at times. This is a movie that can be viewed and understood in many different ways, depending on how the viewer sees it. There is no right or wrong here. It's a celebration of life and creation. This is a film to take with you outside of the theater and think about it for hours later. Bravo to Terrence Malick. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws, a grade of a B+.
Those are high marks, man. Those are really high marks. Did you say something about a Triforce?
Yes. I call it a Triforce. Just because I'm a Zelda fan, and there's this sort of... David, you saw the film. You know what I'm speaking of. There's a sort of flaming Triforce that's...
Right. There are so many amazing images in this movie. I have to say, standout performance by Jessica Chastain, I guess you say it. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. She kind of came out of nowhere, but
she plays the mother of the family.
Yeah, exactly. She's just, I think she was brilliant. Really, really conveying a lot of emotion and a lot of depth without really saying much, just like a look. But, you know, I did see it recently, and I have to say, after I saw it, immediately I was like, okay, can I just sit here and see it again? Because there's so much going on there that I just wanted to take it all in again.
I've heard that a lot from a lot of review sites. That so this requires more than one viewing.
Right. I think it's incredible. And what's really has me interested is I heard that Terrence Malick has like a 6-hour version of the film.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, which really has me more interested in it. So it's interesting. You never know with Malick. I think he's delivered some great films. Thin Red Line's one of my favorite war movies. So I'm always interested to see what he's doing. I definitely have to see it again.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you always hear the case of our movie's art, and some lean heavily more on the art side than the entertainment side. This is really the definition of art house cinema.
I got to ask you this. When you saw the film in your theater, did you notice anybody walking out?
Mine, I did not, but I was at the first show on a Saturday morning.
Okay.
And I think that explains a lot, because those people that were there were...
Everybody
was there for a reason.
Well caffeinated.
Yeah. I mean, this was at 10:30 in the morning.
So wait, is the film like super long? Is it a marathon?
Well, no, it's not really. It clocks in about 2 hours and 20 minutes. But where people are walking out is, I mean, it's very nonlinear in the sense of like the story may be showing you how these suns grow up, and then all of a sudden you're going to cut to the birth of the galaxy and stars and images of volcanoes. And it's more of a feeling piece more than you're actually watching it and try to figure out what the characters are necessarily
up to.
Yeah. It's more about just soaking the whole thing in and experiencing.
This sounds really interesting.
What Malick has to say.
I'm not sure what everybody's thinking about when they go in, you know, what their expectations are, but you really just have to get rid of any expectations you have and just know that you're watching a Terrence Malick film and just take it in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, Matt, you caught something on par with Tree of Life. I think it's called Cars 2.
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
Deep stuff.
Real deep. I went in and we had spoken about when is Pixar going to have their bump in the road. And I can't say that this is really that bump, but it did not leave me with those warm fuzzies that I get from every other Pixar movie. In fact, it really, to me, and maybe it's because I'm a parent now, felt like a 2.5 or whatever, hour and a half long toy commercial.
Yeah.
You know, Mater gets at one point, Mater's a character in the film,
sure,
voiced by Larry the Cable Guy, gets these powers where he can change like appearances. He's a spy in the film, so...
Yeah.
So he has a computer that can change his look. So every time he changes to a different disguise, I'm like, I'm going to have to buy that one. Going to have to buy that one. And there's actually a scene where he does it like rapid fire. He's like, I'm going to be this. I'm going to be this. Let me be
true.
A taco truck.
Oh, so you're constantly hearing.
Oh. And this is a new experience for me. And, you know, I went and saw it with Parker. So it was great, you know, being there with my family.
Okay.
It was a really enjoyable movie. Great action. I will say the violence was ramped up from the first film a lot. Like, I was actually kind of surprised to see a car fall to his apparent death.
Right.
You know, they never actually show it graphically, but he's fallen. He's done, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't want to say shocked me, but definitely I was like, oh, really? A little surprised. All in all, it was serviceable. It was not up there with the rest of the Pixar films for me, but for kids, they're going to love this one. I give it 2.5 Jaws.
All right.
Go see it with the family.
Nice. And the other one you caught was...
I saw the Ryan Reynolds triumphant masterpiece, Green Lantern.
<What's>
Could do it with a straight face. Serviceable at best, man. I mean, this is it's a good film. In every little segment is good. They just strung it together wrong. It was like the editor took a vacation or something. I thought the writing was actually pretty good. They stayed true to the Green Lantern mythos for the most part. They took some liberties, but nothing that's going to piss off a hardcore fan. But, you know, the ring gives you the power to create anything you can imagine, and these are the best things the writers could imagine for the ring to create. I was like, come on! So that left me a little disappointed. And the climactic ending, the thing that he creates to ultimately win, because I'm not giving anything away here. The hero wins, all right? We know
what?
This. It's true.
Oh,
David,
man.
Sorry to ruin it for you.
How many Jaws on this one, Matt?
Two Jaws at best.
Wow.
Maybe, two. I'm giving it two.
Wow, that's sort of disappointing. David, you saw this one as well.
You
agree with two Jaws?
I agree with what he said about both those films. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, with Green Lantern, I mean, I'm a fan of the character, and I think there's a lot to cull from, decades worth of material, but I feel like there was so much going, they just put as much as they could into this movie. And when I say that, I mean they put like so many characters. I would say the highlight of the movie is Sarsgaard as the villain. I mean, he was Hector Hammond. He played Hector Hammond. He was great.
Yeah, he looks awesome.
He was
pretty cool.
He was a hoot. He was fun. But I just feel like you could have stretched out what was going on in this movie and gave it more characterization, more time, more slow burn, more dramatic build in like maybe two or three movies, you know. But they just wanted to cram everything in this movie, I guess. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, agreed.
Disappointing. Our last theater review is one that David here caught. Midnight last night at the IMAX here at Navy Pier, you were treated to Michael Bay's masterpiece of Transformers 3. Let's hear it.
Right. Now, it actually wasn't midnight, but it was a screening last night at Navy Pier. I can't do too many midnight movies, man, and not anymore.
It's 11:45.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Well, yeah, it was 7:30, but I would have to say there's a built-in audience for these movies, okay? I skipped the last one. I thought the first one was okay. The robots were better than the humans. And this film is no different in that the humans are just... human characters are just weak. You know, just silly, redundant, you know, just kind of stupid. I actually like the robot story going on here. It was very, very interesting. I mean, you had Leonard Nimoy voicing one of the robots. That was very cool. I think you have to see this one in IMAX 3D. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think this is one of the best live-action 3D movies of the year so far. That they got the lighting right. They got
a short list, though.
Well, right, of course. I mean, there's so many post-converted 3D movies like, you know, Thor and Green Lantern. But I would say this was pretty, at times, I would say astounding, especially like if you're a Chicagoan or if you know Chicago, you're just rooting for your city to be obliterated, and it gets wasted within
That's
the last.
Awesome. I can't wait to
see
this.
It's great. I mean, it's like, oh, that building's getting blown up. Oh, that building. That's where I work.
I worked there. Yeah,
exactly. So the last hour is pretty amazing just to see what they're doing. And last year, we saw a lot of the, you know, many of you saw a lot of the filming and stuff being done and the write-ups. So cool to see something in our town. But that's still probably the best part is the battles. But, I mean, that's what you go to this kind of movie for anyway. And
sure.
I think out of the, you know, like I said, I didn't see the last one. But I think this one's better than the first one.
All right. How many Jaws?
I'd probably give it 2.5.
2.5 Jaws?
Yeah.
To recommend.
Yeah. We gave it 3 interested last week, and I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to check it out eventually.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Did they destroy Division Street?
No, this is safe. You're safe here.
All right.
All right. Well, we'll see if any of these that we just mentioned appear on our top 5 of 2011. We're halfway through the year, and the top 5 this week of 2011 is sponsored by...
Protect Your Home. A licensed dealer of ADT Security Systems, Rye.
Yeah, ADT is the number one monitoring service in the country, Matt.
I know, and it comes with those world-famous yard signs.
Yes,
which always
scare
off
people away.
Yeah.
Now, the monitoring charge is just over $1 a day, Matt. That's less than you spend for coffee.
Yep. I drink the expensive stuff, And the best part is you can save 20% on your homeowner's insurance.
That is the best part. Why wouldn't you at that point? The number to call to get ADT is 1-866-778-3127. That number is 866-778-3127.
And we thank them for their support of Cinema Jaw.
Awesome. So the top five of 2011, halfway point here, Matt. As I was saying, I think at the beginning of the episode, I have films that maybe one, possibly two, are going to appear on my top 10 at the end of the year. But I guarantee you, three to four aren't.
Okay.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get us started here with my number five of the year. It is a comic book movie. And I've been bad on the comic book movies of late. I think we're seeing too many of them. It's a saturated market. They're all just starting to blend together with how they became the superhero and boo-hoo-hoo. But number five for me this year, Thor, came out in May. Love this one.
I am shocked, Rye. I am shocked.
And if you go back and listen to the tapes, I don't know what episode it was on. Eye for an Eye, I gave it an ignore. I wasn't really interested. I sort of was like, I'll go see it. I was blown away with how much I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed the way they kept the Thor story and made it so real, this idea that they were on Earth and this was happening in galaxies and another world away. I sort of fell hook, line, and sinker for it, and I loved the whole travel through space. I love that kind of stuff. As far as the action, it got down here on Earth. It was funny. The action was good. Like the story, but I think it was a little predictable, as a lot of these superhero movies are. But at the same time, so far for 2011, it sits at number five, Thor.
That's a good choice. I think that's the best comic book movie, you know, summer comic book movie that we've seen so far this year out of the three of them.
I would disagree, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. All right. What do you got at number five, David?
Okay, I have a movie that came out, I believe, in April called Hannah. And it's... thank you. It's directed by Joe Wright, who did The Soloist and Pride and Prejudice. And he directs this... It's a kinetic thriller. It's a cross between, I would say, if it had parents...
See? Ooh, nicely done.
We got a Cinema Jaw listener.
Yeah,
right,
I've been
here.
Listening. The Bourne movies... I guess there's three parents here. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
The Bourne movies, Run Lola Run, and Dogtooth. So
nice.
that's a lot of interesting parents.
Wow, Dogtooth is a parent. Maybe dog, now I'm in.
Maybe Run Lola Run.
Maybe Dogtooth would be you know, like step parents.
Yeah,
something.
A distant cousin.
Yeah. But it stars Saoirse Ronan, and who is in Atonement, mm-hmm. also directed by Joe Wright.
What's her name?
Saoirse.
Saoirse.
Yeah. It's. Yeah. Yeah,
she was also.
You wouldn't know that by looking at it.
She was also in The Lovely Bones.
It's also a song by the Kinks.
Yes,
Saoirse Ronan.
There you go.
Go ahead.
As a, she plays a 16-year-old who's been isolated from the world since birth by her widowed father, an ex-CIA operative played by Eric Bana. He himself is great, but Saoirse Ronan really stands out. She's just feral and sweet all at the same time, and once. You know, he prepares her to be an assassin, and he knows that this destiny is going to come her way when she has to make the choice to get out in the world. So he's preparing her because he knows what's going to happen. And I'm not going to give it away, but let me just say that she has to be on the run because there's a mysterious government agent played by Kate Blanchett, and Blanchett is great in this. And it's like this father and daughter, they kind of separate, and they're both on the run, so you go back and forth, but... You never lose interest. I mean, this movie just has you, both with the cinematography and the soundtrack from the Chemical Brothers. You know, I would check it out.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this one. This is one I just didn't get out to see, and can't wait to give it a spin on DVD. Good pick. Matt, what do you got at number five?
Yeah, I'm going for the girl vote here. I got Bridesmaids at number five. I think it was one of the most creative and... funny, and I'm using air quotes here, chick flicks of the year. And I think even on their poster it said, chick flicks don't have to suck. they never did before. I get what they were going for with that poster. But it's really, again, a lot of people equate it to like a female version of The Hangover. I think that does it a disservice. It stands alone on its own merits, and that's my number five pick.
Nice. Nice pick, Matt. Got to see that one. Got to see it. We swing it into our number fours, and this one came out in April. Directed by Duncan Jones. I was interested in seeing this one right away. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm speaking of Source Code.
Good call.
You are like, I'm like one behind you.
That's good. I'm on, this is my number four here. We'll talk about it again when we get up to yours.
Okay.
But not as deep as I would say, obviously, as Inception or even Duncan Jones' first film, Moon. But very entertaining train ride, no pun intended here. You know, it's supposed to also take place in Chicago. Most of the filming did not, but the exterior shots.
You see
at least
a few shots of
right.
Chicago, which
and,
is cool.
Which always makes it a little bit more enjoyable, you know. Entertaining, but, you know, just deep enough to keep you like, this is pretty cool. What's going on? But at the end, I wasn't like totally blown away, which I think this is what they wanted you to be. But for my money, for a thriller out of Jake Gyllenhaal, good second outing by Duncan Jones. My number four so far, 2011.
I agree with that pick 100%.
Good pick. Duncan Jones did well.
Yeah. What do you got it for, David?
Number four, I have the latest adaptation of a literary classic, Jane Eyre.
Wow.
And I was surprised myself that I would be interested in this. I've never read the book. I've never seen any other adaptation, TV, film, whatever. And maybe that's why I liked it, just because this is my introduction to a character. And it's yet another spirited teen girl, kind of like Hannah. This one, Jane Eyre, is played by Mia. I'm not even getting her last name
yeah,
right. Wasikowska or something
yeah.
like that. She was Alice in Alice in Wonderland, but she also did a great job in the last year's The Kids Are All Right.
Righto.
So I don't know if you know the story behind Jane Eyre. She's had a rough life. She was passed off by her aunt, shipped off to a strict boarding school, her spirited independence was perceived as insolence, and eventually she gets a job as a governess at this estate where it basically is owned by this charming yet kind of mysterious guy by the last name of Rochester. So everybody knows like the Rochester Jane Eyre kind of romance thing, you know, except me. And that's probably why going in it was very interesting. Michael Fassbender plays Rochester, and I haven't found any of his work to be anything but enjoyable, like, so far. I mean, like, Centurion was great. You got to see Hunger. But Fassbender, and he was in X-Men, he's just fantastic here. He's very charming. But both of these characters, some of the best scenes are just seeing them talk. You know, just sitting in a room, talk, and you see what's going on while nothing is being said. You just, their body language and their expression. So I would say if you're at all interested in any type of like a, you know, like a 19th century type of drama or even like a romance.
And who isn't?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's funny because the trailer, if you watch the trailer, it almost looks like a gothic horror film. It advertises that.
Right.
And so it's very interesting. You don't know what's going on. And it's directed by the guy who did Sin Nombre, a great film from last year. I would check it out if you have an open mind and you've never read it, or maybe you've seen other versions of it and you wanted to get a new take on it. I'd say check it out.
Nice. Strong pick at number four. Matt, can you follow it up?
Yeah, I got a follow up for that. Something we already mentioned. Thor is my number four.
Excellent.
I thought it was just a slice above number five. I like Thor. We already talked about it, so, you know.
No doubt.
I'll pass it back around here.
Yeah, swing it into our number threes. Number three for me, here comes the J.J. Abrams film Super 8.
At number three?
Well?
Really?
At number three?
I think this is low, but go ahead.
Well, it's got Elle Fanning in there. It came out in June. It's sort of a return to the simpler summer blockbuster. Had a Goonies feel to it. I love that there's an original story out there in the summer that isn't based on a comic or a sequel. I appreciate that. And it was just an innocent feel, something that you could go to, have fun with, and walk out and just know that you saw a good, clean, wholesome, exciting summer blockbuster. J.J. Abrams teamed up with Spielberg. I highly recommend it. I enjoyed this one thoroughly.
I couldn't agree more. You might see it on my list.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you might
see
it on mine, too. So
oh, this is good. This is good.
I have further comments to make.
What do you got at number three, David?
I have a movie called, it's been in limited release. You might still be able to find it. It's called Beginners.
Ooh, and I am going to go see it this weekend. It's on my radar.
You know, not a whole lot of people have probably seen writer and director Mike Mills' first movie, Thumbsucker. I thought it was pretty funny, but also somewhat poignant, too. And kind of like this movie. This is a sweet, funny, and poignant film about a father and a son. It's also about a man and a woman. And really just about being honest with who you are kind of while you're pursuing love. Ewan McGregor plays Oliver, a Los Angeles graphic designer who cautiously finds himself getting involved with Anna, played by Melanie Laurent from Inglourious Basterds. I think she was the gem of that movie. She plays a spontaneous French actress. And then the courtship finds Oliver thinking about his widowed father, Hal, played by Christopher Plummer, in a fantastic role. I could see him getting a Best Supporting Actor nomination for this. He's thinking about him because he himself had come out of the closet at age 75 after being married to Oliver's mother for 44 years. And as Oliver finds it a challenge to truly be open with his heart and embrace the possibility of a happy relationship, he thinks of how his father's surprising honesty was received, you know, and how he embraced it with energy and with bravery. And he started to develop a new relationship with his father. And I think there's a lot of different people can enjoy this movie on many different levels. And it's Mike Mills does a great job. He's also a graphic artist. And what's interesting is it's basically like a semi-autobiography. It's based on his own life, based on his own experience. His father came out. And so it's interesting. He has a really imaginative, even visual look at the film. It's filmed with like the Red One camera. Mm-hmm. So it's unfortunately not getting a wide release. I'd love to see it build, but definitely check it out.
Nice pick. It's on my radar. I know it's playing at the Century still here in Chicago.
You know, what I saw written is that this is the best Ewan McGregor performance in a long time.
Nice.
So. I would agree.
Matt, what do you got at 3?
I got Source Code. There you go.
There we go.
Yeah. You're stealing the rug out from under me, Rye. But, I guess we said it all, but what I would add is I really like this one. It's also a bit of a throwback to, I hesitate to use the word psychological thriller because I guess it's not. It's a little bit more on the surface than that, but I liked it. I mean, it's got that feeling of you're figuring out a mystery like Memento.
Right.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Or even Hitchcock kind of suspense.
Yeah, it's nowhere near there.
Yeah.
But that's...
I get you.
It's skimming that surface, and
right.
I liked it for that. And I think it was a cut above the rest so far in the year, so that's why that meant 3 for me.
Yeah, I thought it was very imaginative.
Nice pick. Swings us into our heavy hitters, our number 2s here. I spoke about it earlier. I just gave my review. Tree of Life sits at number 2 of my year so far. This Terrence Malick film, I think, can keep climbing higher. Sort of as David said, it actually takes time to settle. I wasn't even sure what to give it for a day and a half. I just sort of thought about it more and more.
Like a Guinness.
Yes, like a Guinness. Well put, man. This one takes time, but Tree of Life, if we were doing this maybe 2 weeks down the road, maybe it would have been my number 1. It's the boldest film I've seen in years. Definition of art house. And like I said, still haven't had enough time with it. But number 2 right now, Tree of Life for me.
That's a worthy pick.
Number 2, David?
My number 2 is Super 8.
There we go.
Damn you. Really?
All right, are we on the same page?
Okay. No.
We'll see.
You're a page ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, all right. I think, Ryan, you know, you definitely hit all the spots that I wanted to hit with, you know, talking about the film. But, you know, there's critics out there for this film, isn't there?
There are.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, everybody thinks it's like a ripoff of Spielberg films. Hello, Steven Spielberg's a producer.
Yeah. I know. I agree.
You know, I mean...
Get on board, guys.
You know, I mean, here's what I wrote. If Steven Spielberg was to produce a movie that respectively pays homage to his classic Amblin films, then who better to write and direct it than J.J. Abrams? And one thing to consider, you've seen J.J. Abrams direct. He did the Mission Impossible film. You know, he did Star Trek. Excellent entries. But they were also entries into an established franchise. Like you said, this is not a reboot, a remake, or a sequel. This is his own baby.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's harkening back to a time that was, you know, full of that fear and wonder, a time right before those wonder years, right before innocence is lost. And I really feel like, you know, it's important to tap back into that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Exactly when I felt coming out of the theater, I wanted to say, it was just refreshed that, God, we haven't seen that in movies in so long. It just felt good.
I tell people, go for the creature, stay for the kids.
Good call right there. Matt, what do you got at number 2?
At number 2, I'm sticking behind this one all the way, is X-Men First Class.
All right.
Not only do I think it's one of the best of the year so far, I think at the end of the year, it will still be on my top 5 list as one of the best of the year. I cannot say enough how close to Dark Knighthood this film got. It is that good. I mean, there are those embarrassing training montages,
yeah,
which we spoke of. when we mentioned Thor, and that's the only part of the movie that detracts from this amazing story. And without giving anything away, guess what? Professor X winds up in a wheelchair.
Say it isn't so.
It's true. But this scene where he finally, and we find out how he gets that injury, when that happens, it's almost harrowing. You're like, wow, this is a beyond X-Men. It's easily the best of the X-Men film. Not even a contest. All right, it's out of the ballpark of the X-Men films. And like I said, it's up there in the comic book few movies that have transcended into the realm of Dark Knight. Is it as good as Dark Knight? No, I'm not saying that. Okay, I'm not going there. But it's in the ballpark. It's in the same realm. So my number two of the year.
I trust you on that pick. I want to see that one, Matt.
You should. Everyone should.
Swings us into our number ones.
Here we go.
And my number one, oh my goodness, it's directed by Woody Allen. This is where I got Midnight in Paris.
Really? A number one.
Oh, boy.
So far of the year, I enjoyed it the most. It's funny, it's entertaining, and it's inspiring. I bought The Great Gatsby for my Nook. I haven't read it since high school. And because of this, I was all inspired. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go back and read a good old Scott Fitzgerald, because the movie just gave that charm of the old 1920s Paris, seeing all these artists. So Woody Allen, I thought Owen Wilson did a fantastic job of channeling the Woody Allen lines, but yet doing it in a sort of a Owen Wilson type character esque. Wasn't totally Woody, and then that's sometimes a fine line to walk.
Sure.
So for me, for my money, right now, Midnight in Paris. Do I think it's going to stand all the way through 2011? Probably not for me, but that's where it stands. My number one so far. What do you got, David?
I'll respect that.
My number one, and let me just say, I based my list, and I had a criteria where I had to want to see the movie again. You know, so it had to be worth repeated visits. And I think so far, all these movies, for me, I definitely want to check out again. But I definitely want to revisit Cedar Rapids.
Nice. It's one of my honorables.
Yeah. It was released in mid-February. I just found this to be the first movie. I mean, we're looking at mid-February. I mean, you know how January is. You know, it's a drought.
Sure.
You know, and so when this movie came around, I just found it to be delivering on all levels. I mean, it's smartly written. It's well acted by a cast that will actually surprise you because you feel like you know Ed Helms' roles. You know John C. McGinley. He's a good actor, too. But John C. Reilly, you know, you feel like you know his roles, but they actually surprise you. I feel like these guys are portraying real characters in an honest way. I mean, yes, there's definitely comedy, and it could be kind of crude, but it's also real. I mean, I feel like I know these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I left the movie, I felt like I was leaving people that I became friends with, like characters that I became friends with, and I wanted to revisit.
That's the best. And yeah. And for the Jawheads at home, Cedar Rapids just came out on DVD, so give it a spin. I know it's on number one on my queue.
It's actually, and this is no joke, it really is number one on my queue.
Yeah. All right, Matt, you got the last laugh here. What's your number one of 2011?
I'm shocked that this wasn't either one of your number ones. I'm going with Super 8, man. Again, you're pulling the rug out. But like you were saying, Rye, I think this is, you know, it harkens back to the Goonies. And, you know, another one that people aren't liking it to, but I think fits, is Stephen King's It. It's almost got that that sci-fi, almost a horror element mm-hmm. to it. So I really love those films. Like you were saying about the Wonder Years, I think it's great to see that back. Let's have more of it. I want to see Goonies 2 already.
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, so, I don't know if that's going to happen, but...
Well, if this is a nail in the stairway to Goonies 2,
Goonies
I am
2,
all...
the musical?
Yeah. Well, whatever, man. I don't even care. I'm all over it. So, Super 8, the best film so far.
Good pick.
Awesome. So, that's our checkpoint halfway through the year, our top five of 2011. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we got a brand new segment called Cinema War, DVD reviews, and then trivia. David versus Matt in... Tom Hanks movie trivia. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a Cinema Jaw movie fact. Regarding the film Source Code, Quantum Leap actor Scott Bakula voiced Coulter's father. Bakula starts off his phone conversation in the film by saying, "Oh boy." That was his trademark line from Quantum Leap, which has a similar plot to that of Source Code. And that is your Cinema Jaw movie fact.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, coming up to a brand new segment here, Matt. It's very exciting. This segment is called...
Cinema War.
And it works like this. Think of the card game War, except me versus you, Matt, in a topic each week.
I know the fans have been itching for me and you to go at it on something or other.
Yes.
So, right.
And each week the guest is going to be the judge. So David Foley of Keeping It Real, if you don't mind putting on the judge's cloak and the Cinema Jaw judge's wig and just...
It's powdered, so I hope it doesn't make you itch.
Bring it on.
At the end of this, you tell us who you think won the war.
I will embrace my role.
Reno, what do we got on the topic for Cinema War this week?
Today's Cinema War topic, is John Cusack a good actor? Matt, you'll be fighting that he is. Rye, you'll be fighting that he is not. Let the Cinema War begin.
All right, you want me to go first? All right. My first point... His filmography cannot be argued with. Better Off Dead, Eight Men Out, Say Anything, Being John Malkovich, and 2012? Come on!
Oh, jeez, Matt. Hey, he may not be terrible in his movies, but he's not good either, and that's because he plays one character in every movie, and his name is John Cusack.
All right, I got one. He's actually an artist. The artwork in One Crazy Summer and Better Off Dead are really his drawings, so that speaks to his talent.
Ooh. Well, get this one, Matt. When looking back at a 27-year acting career and your most challenging role is Lloyd Dobler, the kickboxer, you have a problem.
Oh, man, I would disagree with that. All right, he gave us Joan.
Oh, that's terrible. Matt... honest to God, Matt, he always puts his less talented sister Joan in all his movies just to make himself look better.
See, now I'm wishing I actually got more serious with my picks here. He's close friends with Jeremy Piven. They've done 10 movies together, and it's no surprise because he actually studied acting at the Piven Theater Workshop here in Evanston, Illinois, run by the parents of Jeremy Piven.
Ooh. Matt, John Cusack is destined to play in lighthearted films about skiing, record stores, and hot tub time machines. Any role that is a bit challenging, John should put down his boombox, learn his identity, not say anything, because this is serendipity. He is not a good actor. To me, he's just better off dead.
Oh, man. Poetic.
We throw this over to the judge. It's in your hands right now, David Foley of Keeping It Real. You got to declare a winner. What do you got?
Well, Rye, Matt, I have to say, Rye, you stated your case well, but you lost.
Oh, no!
Yes!
Come on!
You're picking on a Chicago guy? Really? All right. I'd say his greater roles really outweigh all the duds. I mean, come on. But he's also been in, like, some thrillers, some, you know, like...
Sure.
1408, Identity. Those were creepy films.
Grifters and he did was cool,
yeah,
too.
Grifters was fantastic. So, you state your case well, Rye. But, Matt, I'm going to have to go with, you know, I mean, Better Off Dead. $2!
$2! Oh, $2. Man. Yeah. I tell ya.
Wow, I pull out a win there.
Well
That's
played,
fantastic.
Matt. First ever Cinema War goes to Matt. You heard it here first.
It wasn't argued better, Rye, but I think you gave me a layup there. So
right. I mean, Rye definitely worked for it.
Yeah. He worked hard.
I tried hard. Yeah. I tried hard. And I did want to say a quick DVD review that I finally caught was How Do You Know? Is out on DVD with Reese Witherspoon, Owen Wilson, Paul Rudd. And How Do You Know This Movie's Gonna Suck, Matt? Well, within the first 5 minutes, Reese Witherspoon is playing a professional softball player. You never buy it. Owen Wilson is playing a professional baseball pitcher. You don't buy it.
What about Jack?
Jack is in it. He's actually okay in the role. I didn't hate him, but Owen Wilson really does his hardest to save this, but I would say skip it. Rye the Movie Guy is giving it 1.5 Jaws, a grade of a D+. How do you know?
Paul Rudd couldn't save this movie?
No, he was terrible in here, actually.
See, I skipped it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So skip it. In case you haven't already, there is a new film opening up. It's in theaters. It is called Larry Crown. It is written, directed, and starring Tom Hanks. Also, Julia Roberts is in it. And for you Howard Stern and Star Trek fans, George Takei is also in it. So,
excellent.
Because of Larry Crown, we
love
have
George Takei.
Tom Hanks movie trivia.
All right.
And it works like this. You each get a chance. If the person doesn't know, there are steals. And you get one lifeline. Our wonderful producer, Steve Marino, will help you out with a clue if you get stuck.
Okay, Matt.
David, You're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. And I should remind the Jawheads at home that Matt was defeated last week, just slaughtered by Scott Lucas, a local H. Matt is now 8-12 on the year, a terrible losing record. David, do you want to go first or let Matt?
I feel like the Cubs.
Well, Matt, I'm gonna just for you, I'm going to go first.
Okay.
All right. Question number one, over to David. What actress said this line, "Run, Forrest, run," in Forrest Gump?
That would be Robin Wright Penn.
1-0, David. Over to Matt. In The Burbs, what actor said the line, "No, you can't go. I called the pizza dude"?
Corey Feldman.
1-1. We got a ball game. Question over to David. Hanks played a character named Michael Sullivan opposite Paul Newman and Jude Law in this 2002 film. You do have a lifeline.
All right, Reno, help me out.
Rescue me, Reno. Question number three. Hanks played a character named Michael Sullivan opposite Paul Newman and Jude Law in this 2002 film.
And your clue is A Street to Audition.
Ooh. And your clue is
Road to Perdition. Thank you very much. I'm a comic book guy. I should know
that. 2-1. Yeah. Over to Matt. Keep it tied here. In A League of Their Own, what position did Gina Davis characters play?
She was the catcher.
Very good.
2-2. Wow, perfect so far. We throw this one back over to David. Tom Hanks was a train conductor in this Robert Zemeckis Christmas animated film.
The Polar Express.
3-2. Throw this one over to Matt. Hanks falls in love with Catherine Zeta-Jones and lives in an airport in this 2004 movie. You do have a lifeline.
Yeah. I know this film. I saw it. Rescue Me, Reno.
Rescue Me, Reno. Question number six. Hanks falls in love with Catherine Zeta-Jones and lives in an airport in this 2004 film.
And your clue is the area where you board the plane.
Oh, boy, Matt.
It's the terminal.
Oh, wow. He said it in almost a guess.
Wow.
It was. I've seen the movie, and I really liked it.
Wow.
Actually, so.
3-3. This question is over to David. This is huge. In Apollo 13, Hanks played Jim Lovell, the astronaut, who played Mission Control flight director Gene Kranz, who said, "Failure is not an option."
Ed Harris.
4-3. This is the last question. It couldn't come down to a jawbreaker. Jesus. We've never gone perfect in trivia ever. Question is over to Matt. The first time.
No pressure.
The first time Hanks starred opposite Meg Ryan was in this 1990 comedy where he thought he was dying. The first time he starred with Meg Ryan. Came out in 1990. He thought he was dying.
Gosh.
Currently 4-3. We're trying to go for a perfecto, Matt. Holy. He wishes he had that lifeline.
Yeah, I really do. I wish I could remember the terminal.
Oh, man.
This is just terrible. I've done well, too.
You have, Matt. I'm actually cheering for you this week. Also cheering for David, though.
Okay, thanks.
I got to give you the buzzer.
All right, give me the buzzer.
What
you
was
know
the,
this one?
What was the lifeline on that one? Just in case he had an extra lifeline, what would have it been? The last lifeline, Reno.
Your clue would have been lava.
Oh, man!
Yeah, you know,
Joe
lava?
Versus the volcano.
Yes! Game goes to David. Set and match. Unbelievable. Well done,
why
David.
Why couldn't I pull that out of my mind?
I tell you.
I love that movie.
Matt falls to 8-13 now on the year. Whew, that is rough. There were jawbreakers in case there was
a tie.
All right.
Let's hear it.
David, better early Tom Hanks film, Splash or Big?
I'm going to go with Splash.
It's actually Big.
Oh.
I just like the part where they go bocce
matter of
balls.
Opinions.
Yes. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Meg Ryan. Closest to. David?
Oh, you're going to do this. I'm going to go with 54.
Matt?
If it had been a tie, I think I would have won this. She's 52 years old.
We would have gave that to Matt, 49.
Whoa. Sorry, Meg.
Boy, too bad.
Hey-oh.
David wins.
She just did some nudity. We'd have to check that with Mike McPadden, but not,
Mr.
Too,
Skin,
not
sure.
too long ago.
Ouch.
Yeah. Hey, we got time for a couple of Hollywood headlines before we blow out of here.
All right.
Get a load of this one, Matt. Speaking of Cars 2, Time Magazine announced their top 25 animated films of all time. Now, the top five were Spirited Away, Dumbo, The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie, WALL-E, and the number one animated film, according to Time Magazine, Pinocchio. Not even seen on the list of the top 25, Beauty and the Beast. Not even on the list.
I'm cool with that.
And for you,
I'm not.
And for you, Akira fans, came in at number 17.
That's surprising. I'm surprised Akira's not even on there. Because it's, I mean, I love Akira, but I don't think it's recognized enough by mainstream.
No, well, if Spirited Away is on the list,
fantastic.
I mean, yeah, I feel good about that. But I love Beauty and the Beast.
I do too. I'm really like, seriously, the Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner film?
Yeah, that is weird.
That's real weird.
Maybe just because of a classic.
For the whole list, go to Time Magazine and check it out. What do you got, Matt?
All right. Haley Joel Osment will see dead people again in the Frankenstein movie, Wake the Dead.
Wow.
I've been waiting for this return. Pins and needles. I just can't wait to pull out my Haley Joel t-shirt and get back to the theater.
Is Haley going to play the dead? He's.
I have no idea what role he's in. I'm happy to see him coming back. I really think this kid can act, and now as an adult, we'll see.
The last I heard, he rammed his car into a tree. That was the last I heard of Haley Joel.
Okay. I was hoping for a secondhand lines too, but I guess that's not going to happen.
That was probably his last
notable role.
Yeah, no doubt.
Which I thought was good.
Yeah. Get a load of this one. Alice Cooper made cameo in Tim Burton's Dark Shadows, which is already starring Johnny Depp.
Really? I mean, Alice Cooper and Tim Burton look so similar, they could just play brothers.
I think Alice Cooper really is Tim Burton.
It could be. Could be. All right.
All right.
Is it going to be in 3D?
More
than likely. Yeah, everything is.
I don't want to see Alice Cooper in 3D.
Oh, man.
All right. I got one for you. Guillermo del Toro, if I didn't mutilate his first name.
Good job. Well. No.
Thank you. Confirms Pacific Rim role for Charlie Day. Pacific Rim is a futuristic alien invasion action movie.
I'm not familiar with Patrick Day. Do you know this actor?
Charlie Day?
Charlie Day, is that
it? He's with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
oh,
right?
That's
he's in
he's
Horrible
from.
Bosses.
Gotcha. Okay.
Hey, Del Toro, I'm always interested in his stuff.
So am I. And I've already read a little bit about this Pacific Rim. I'm interested.
He's saying it's like the biggest monster movie ever?
Yes.
Sign me up.
Sign me up, too. But the last time I saw a movie called Pacific Rim, it had nothing to do with this sort of thing.
Hello!
Well, yeah, well.
That's all I got this week, man.
Well done, Matt. Well, Matt went down another blaze of glory.
Oh, my God.
That was a tough one, I tell you, man.
Oh, man, I'm going to cry my pillow tonight, yeah. I swear to God.
But we are coming to the end of another great Cinema Jaw. We want to thank David J. Folley from keepingitreal.com, and that's keeping-it-real-. I already butchered
keeping
it.
Keeping-it-real.com.
And it's spelled R-E-E-L.
There you go.
Yeah, check out his reviews. They're always fun to read. David, thanks for coming over to Cinema Jaw.
Thanks for having me. I hope you have me back. This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back in the future, man.
Excellent.
Yeah. Maybe toward the end of the year, we could do our best of the year.
We like it.
Cool.
I want to thank our sponsors, PBR, ADT, and the new 400 Theater.
Always a blast at all those things. So.
Absolutely. And thanks to our wonderful producer,
Steve Reno Morazic, best in the biz.
Thanks for the assist, Reno.
Till next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
Peace.